Can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Hi, this is Dee Blick. Welcome to Lead Well, Live Well for UK Health Radio. Hello and a warm welcome to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio, the world's biggest talk health radio station with me, your presenter, Dee Blick. Thank you so much for joining me. It's lovely to have your company. Now, in the studio today is a fascinating man. He's been a first response firefighter, then a station commander. He's also a mountain guide, and he is one of the most inspiring motivational speakers I've had the privilege of inviting to speak at my events, and also when I was just sitting in the audience marvelling at him. When he's not tornado chasing, which is one of the hobbies he shares with his wife, Kirsty, you'll find him at the helm of a thriving IT business, Trig Point Consulting. I am delighted to welcome you, Richard Betts, to the show today.
Hi, Dee. Thank you so much. What a fantastic introduction, and it's an absolute pleasure to be here with you today on the show. Thank you.
Oh, it's great to have you. Now, before we talk about your adventures as, I mean, it's a right list, this, isn't it? As a mountain guide, a motivational speaker, and you're also the founder of two successful businesses, which is Pied-à-Terre Adventures and Trig Point Consulting. I want you to dip back into the dim and distant past when you were a firefighter. I'd love to know what you learned about yourself and what the role entailed.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was a really interesting time. I joined back in 1996, just fresh out of university from business school and in work, and wanted to put something back in, very much inspired actually by my grandfather, who was signed up in World War II and was, you know, did his part for the country. And me joining in the fire service was giving something back. And it was a fantastic experience. I learned so much about myself. I learned the biggest thing, even more so when I became in charge, was that you had to find a solution. You had to find an answer, because when people call the fire brigade and you turn up, whatever you're faced with, you have to stabilize that situation and get a positive outcome as you can get from it. And it was a very good leveler and enabled me to learn how to achieve that outcome and adopt the mindset that whatever's coming your way, you can process it and work through it. And I had the honor of serving alongside and leading a whole variety of different people from all sorts of different backgrounds. And I think because we were an on-call fire service, we were working with members in the community who lived, worked in the community from all sorts of different backgrounds and trades. The depth of experience and knowledge and different ways that people tackle things all came together, bound by the common role of being in the fire service and what we did. And you know, what it made me realize is that as a team, you know, you're as strong as the weakest link, which is very, very typical, people say. But actually, if you encourage, nurture, and develop your people around you and train them so we're confident, so whatever pressure we're on, we trust our processes through regular training, with that thought process and that belief and that common bond, nothing gets in your way. And for me, that was fundamental in a lot of how I think and tackle things now. And maybe it just played to how I'm wired. But yeah, being part of that was really just a fantastic opportunity and a privilege and honor to have helped so many people.
Do you know what? I was listening to you there. There's a couple of things that were going through my mind. One is, I love that you shared about your granddad. And I can't tell you the number of amazing guests I've had on Lead Well, Live Well, where they speak about a family member. And I think it was Richie Clark, who's the franchisor of the Pets Homes and Gardens. And he said he too was inspired by his granddad. And I know, looking back in my family, my Auntie Mary really inspired me. And I always think it's wonderful when you can go back into those family archives and trace your ambition or your desire to do well and to really make your family proud of you, when you can isolate that one person that made such a difference. Now, the other question that I ask as a mere civilian, did you ever find yourself in a situation as a firefighter when you actually thought, goodness me, this could go either way? I could be going down as well as the building.
Yeah, you know, we were in I was wearing breathing apparatus in an incident with one of my teammates, and we were in a situation where you know, the building was starting to, you know, clearly it was suffering the effects of the damage, and we were in this room, and it was very weird. Just all our senses were just super enhanced, and like, it just did not feel right in that position. And through training and from just looking at each other, knowing it was right and trusting our senses, we left the room. Yeah. And not long after that, the floor collapsed in that building from the first floor. So it was just, I can't describe whether or not it was someone over my shoulder, but it was training as well, and just that gut instinct, just there. And from that was a big thing where I learned, you know what, if your gut's telling you something, you need to listen to it. So yeah, that was probably the biggest moment of being on the edge.
Well, you'll be pleased now that I'm actually going to take you from burning buildings and into business, where you're immersed now. But yeah, I want to talk about your business that you're still a founder of now and a partner of, which is Pied à Terre Adventures, before we talk about Trig Point Consulting later in the interview. But I'd love to know, what inspired you to co-found Pied à Terre Adventures with your wife, Kirsty? Was it your extreme weather chasing, your love of mountaineering, or something else?
It was, you know what, it was, I was in a great job, doing very well, very successful in the role I did, but I needed more, and I needed a business. And for me and Kirsty, we loved the outdoors, and we had lots of adventures together with that. And it was part of where I love my geography from school, but it was a way of just bringing all that together. And when we founded the business, I always wanted a business, and I had my first business when I was 18, and I left school. And this was getting back into that world that I loved. I wanted to do something for us that we could do. And you know what? I didn't like traditional walking holidays. I never went on a traditional walking holiday because it wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to do something different. So I thought, actually, hang on a minute, I can do this and get outdoors and build something that we can do together. Because I make a phenomenal team, and yin and yang and fitting together. And I thought, actually, we started down this route, and it was fantastic. So yeah, so that was kind of driven. And yeah, we probably do like our storm chasing, but not when we're out the mountains though.
it's lovely though, isn't it, when you found a business based on your passion and what really makes you tick. And I just, all that experience you brought from the fire service, the negotiation skills, the managing challenging and hazardous situations. And we've got a couple of minutes to the break, and I would love you to share with me and our listeners some of your memorable mountain expeditions, because I know from speaking to you before, you're often taking very successful entrepreneurs on adventures, and suddenly they're on that mountainside and they're not quite as confident as they are in the boardroom. And I'd love to know how you manage that.
Yeah, you know, the big thing with being a guide is the trust you form with your client, with the person you're with, or the group you're with. And that is, you know, we're dealing in a very low level, a very fundamental part of a human being, Maslow's pyramid of need, where someone's scared or pushing out of a comfort zone. And to operate in that area, I think, is one of the greatest honors I have of being a guide with somebody. And forming that trust very quickly, and then supporting someone through a challenging time. You know, I was honored to be Richard Branson's guide, in the Alps, where we were doing a multi-day trek. We were out. Richard was had an accident on his bike previously, and it was a tough day, very technical day as well. And we weren't moving as quick as we needed to be. And we had quite a tricky descent down a rock place, which we did, and we did successfully. But we ended up getting back to the hut at the night on some very, very ropey Italian maps that weren't quite as clear as they should be. But we all got back in, and then I never forget the next morning when he came up to the guy. Table said, "Come on, Rich, we're off," and we were out, and we were one of the first back in the next day. So we may have been the last night before, but together we had that bond, and that's a really special place. And I think with any of our clients we take out, it's about that they're coming to you because they're actually it's a tough situation, and you're trying to achieve that objective, and together we do that. And sometimes we're together, you know, on a rope together. So I'm as invested as they are in getting to the outcome in one bit, and that. It's just such a special place, and I deem it as an absolute honor, and that's to be cherished with that, because you're doing something, you know, the outdoors. It doesn't respect money, race, color, creed, sexuality, position, society. It's just two human beings or a group of human beings out there in the elements and the outdoors doing something. And what better place to do that in glorious scenery? So yeah, that's why I love being a guide.
Absolutely fascinating. Now, don't go away. We're just going to make a short break. And after the break, I want to speak a little bit more about Richard's adventures on the mountain. But also, I'm really curious to learn more about motivational speaking, because he is a brilliant speaker and I've seen lots in my time. Back in a few minutes.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, and the fabulous Richard Betts in the studio, talking about being a mountain guide. And Rich, have you ever felt out of your depth when you're there at the edge of this mountain? You've got people that are literally depending on you. Have you ever had a flush of fear or a wave of panic?
You know, it's interesting fear, you know, with that fear. So what I measure it on is there's two types of fear. There's one fear that you embrace and you lean into, and there's another fear that I call terrifying fear. Terrifying fear, we have no place playing in that world, and we always shy away from that. And that's essentially the sort of risk assessment. I think that view of being out of my depth is interesting, because but for me, I think quite often we feel out of our depths when we go into things. And, you know, I don't... maybe a little controversial, but I don't rate the imposter syndrome. I actually welcome that place. I want to be in that, because actually if we're feeling like we're out of our depth, we're feeling that it's new and scary, then well done ourselves. We've pushed ourselves into something new, and providing we're not sitting and terrifying, that's where we stay away from, then absolutely grab that. And I think, you know, when I first stepped up to be an international mountain leader, and I'm then guiding in the Alps. I've got foreign languages. I'm in remote areas. I'm with group on a multi-day trek, in big, scary stuff. Then, yeah, you know what? I'm embracing that imposter syndrome. Certainly when I was learning to be a guide, I trust my training. I trust my skills. And you know what? I'm the hardest person on myself to push to the highest level. But I believe that if I train hard, believe in my skills, believe in my interpersonal skills, I will get the result. And that goes way back to the start of the chat we had there about the fire service. I have to make that result. I am the guide with the clients. We will get through this one way or another. And that's down to me and my role as a guide.
That is just the most amazing answer. I think I was just listening to you thinking, you know what? I think I can reframe my imposter syndrome. I love that. You're almost saying you're bound to feel these feelings when you're doing something new. So rather than trying to run away, kind of lean into it and accept it. And I absolutely love the way you reframed that, just for me personally. But I know that a lot of our listeners will also relate to what you've just said there. And I want to now take you off the mountain. So we've been in the burn burning building. We've been on a mountain. I now want to set you on a stage because you are an incredible motivational speaker. I've listened to you twice and you give so much value to your audience. So I want to ask you, when did motivational speaking enter the fray, and how is it something that you've learned? You certainly, when you're on a stage, you don't have notes, you just speak with such power. But when did all this happen? When did you wake up and think, you know what, I reckon I could start doing some motivational speaking? Spill the beans and share your story.
Oh, I'd love to. So for me, I think one of the eureka moments come was when you very kindly invited me to present one of your events, and I delivered my talk about it, the subject matter, and it was about change, and I had really good feedback from it. But what was really key is in a later event, someone of the member of the audience came up to me and said, "Rich, you made me go and do something. I've changed because of what you said." And that for me, you know, I gave someone the energy, the belief, a compelling reason to make that change. And, you know, it's a catalyst moment. And that's quite often what it comes down to. And I thought, wow, if I can, by me just sharing my experiences, my passion, and I'm a half full guy, I'll grab the day and run with it. And if I can share that and help people fulfill their dreams and their visions and their goals, and I've played just a tiny part in that, then for me, I'm a happy guy. That's something that I love to do. And if I can share that as part of the talking, that's where I want to go. And presenting, I always love it. I always love talking. I'm doing it all the time when I'm in the mountains, presenting about fauna and lichens and rocks and stuff and all the great nature things. And actually, people just get inspired with that. And part of our vision of, you know, our core values in both our businesses is all about inspiring. It's all about being genuine and about, you know, live well, lead well as this program. That's exactly what it's about. And if we can share that, I can share that with other people, and by doing the talking and people are interested in what I want to say and it compels them to do something, then I love it. I'm happy to share my stories. I enjoy it. It's something I love.
I think what makes you such a good speaker is you align the message of being a mountain guide, which a lot of people would think, I'd never do that, but you bring it right back to us as human beings for us to dig deep and for us to really confront the challenges and the opportunities that we face. But I wanted to ask you that you are one of those rare speakers that doesn't have notes. And I know at the event I held, and I've seen you previously at events, you speak for 30 odd minutes. You're not umming and erring. How do you speak with not having notes? Is it just a huge amount of preparation beforehand?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time thinking about my audience and the brief that I've been asked to do. And then, you know, I speak from the heart, I speak from the soul. And I'm drawing on all my experiences of that and pull it together. And yeah, I kind of visualize a little storybook. And I always talk about telling a story. And that's what I want to do. Almost go through the narrative and that journey. So it's like we're going for a little walk in the mountains, like we're going through a project call. It's about weaving that story and that golden thread through the journey. And, you know, I think it's great to have some pointers. But actually, I'm here to talk. I want to share my stories. I want to get engagement with the audience. And I may have some fantastic slideware or whatever, but actually, I can give so much more than that. And sometimes, you know, I'll shift and I'll pivot the talk depending where the audience is going on that. Because ultimately, when I'm talking on stage, we're going on an adventure, guys. We are going on a walk. We're going on a trek. We are going to go on that journey, and we're doing it together for the time I'm on the stage. And sometimes being prescriptive, life's not prescriptive, nature's not prescriptive, things get in the way, and we just have to manage that on the talk. So yeah, I like to speak from the heart and soul.
I'm the same. I mean, as you know, I'm a professional speaker and I don't have notes, and I'm very much like you. I have a beginning and middle and an end. And also I trust. I just think that if I do step over a sentence, if I miss a few words out, it doesn't really matter, that the audience is more inspired by me being relatable and hopefully sharing really great nuggets of wisdom with them. And I know the speakers that I admire the most and that touch my heart are the ones that don't have slides, they don't have scripts. And I was just wondering, we've got a minute to the break now, that this thirst for adventure, I can see where your narrative as a public speaker is embedded in your experience on the mountain. But as a little boy, did you have this thirst for taking on pretty big hazards and fears? Were you scaling hills and crags as a young boy?
I was fortunate to have been brought up in Africa, and I remember as a small boy. So I left Africa when we were six, and I remember disappearing and going climbing up this rock crag. And it's probably not that great, but for me, it seemed a great adventure. As a parent, only mortified, you know, dread to think what snakes would have been lurking around in it, falling off. But anyway, I lived to tell the tale. So I would always be going off those adventures and just that trundling always has. And when I was at school, I loved cross-country running, just heading out on the adventures, just in challenging myself and just going on a runabout. It's just great fun. Yeah, and I think, likewise with the talking, I remember when just working through some thoughts for today, and I remember the first time probably when I truly recognised public speaking, and I was standing at school reading from a book in assembly, and I must have been five or six. It was before I left Africa, and I just remember that feeling of just like, oh, I love that. And that probably was my first sort of trigger going, actually, you know, public speaking and talking is great, but yeah, but it's quite back down memory lane. I love it.
Oh, it's this that saying, isn't there? The child is father of the man. And there we have it in what you've just described now. We're just going to come to a short break, but don't go away, because after the break, I'm going to be talking to Richard a bit more about his other business, Trigger Point Consulting. And I'd love to know if there are any unfulfilled adventures that he's yet to embark on. And I'd like to know how he leads well and lives well in his personal life when he's not scaling mountains or managing massive projects. So back in a few moments.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me and the fabulous Richard Betts. Now, Richard, we've spoken about burning buildings, we've spoken about mountains, and we've spoken about motivational speakers. I'm now going to haul you back into the boardroom because I want you to tell me a bit more about Trig Point Consulting and how it embodies what you've been speaking about, which is essentially your authentic approach to leadership and delivering value to your clients.
Yeah, Trig Point Consulting was a business I founded in lockdown when I had old clients come back to me. And this is in the world of telecoms and IT and business. We launched the business in lockdown. And very clearly, it became to me, you know, there's a few things I wanted that were so key with the business. First of all, the values that are dear to me, that I absolutely uphold and I live my life by, we're going to be in that business in the IT world, which is really, really key. The next thing I wanted to do, I wanted us to be a pioneering consultancy. I did not want us just to be the bulk standard telecoms consulting. So we get involved in projects where people typically step back from. We get involved in those scary projects, big projects that deliver big changes to organizations. And we do that by very similar, you'll notice a trend now, by believing in our skills, believing in our training, believing in our team, and, you know, trusting our gut instinct to achieve those results. And sometimes where we go with projects is scary places. We're not in terrifying, but we push that to help our clients live a big change. And for me, I think that's why, even as a small pioneering consulting business, we've tackled some first in the countries with the first on a 111 contact center. We're tackling some big migration projects, big NHS projects. All of that is founded in the belief in being subject matter experts, trusting our processes and our methodology, and just holding the right values to grab our customer as a guide and leading through it. Similar to guiding, we're on the rope together. The difference is we're just delivering a technology change project.
I love it when you say we're on the ropes together, that mountaineering analogy coming in. And something that was, when a guest is answering, there are various little Sputniks that go off in my brain. And tell me a bit more about values, because that is massively important to me as a businesswoman. I live by my values of authenticity, integrity. I will never, ever tell a client a lie just to save my face. And sometimes that has caused me grief, almost a level of honesty that was not what they wanted to hear. But I would really like to understand more about the values that you're embedding in TriggerPoint Consulting, because they come from you, don't they?
Yeah, they do, 100%. And I think what's really key for me in the projects that we want to take on, and we do take on, we've got to have reality, we've got to have truth, we've got to have integrity, and we've got to be found our decisions. Every decision we make, we have to make with evidence behind it. So we're looking at the data, we're analyzing it. So when we're making decisions or recommendations to our customers, we have to stand by those because there may be some serious consequences. You know, we may be shifting a route we're going. It's a big decision. And sometimes people need to have that they don't want to hear what we're telling them, but it's the reality of the right way with it. And it's how we do that. And our values with that, you know, we're kind. We're not going to shy away from things. Exactly the same principles I had in the fire service and in guiding. You know, sometimes someone's not able to do that walk. It's just too much. And it's how you deliver that news and take them with that you don't destroy them in the process. And that's where we have the consultancy side. In fact, you know, we've it's very exciting, this day. We've built a model for our consultancy now, and it's called the reality model. Because that's what we operate in. We operate in the reality. And that's the process, the thread that runs through our business, for our approach. So we're very passionate about it, as you can probably tell.
And could you tell me, what does reality stand for? It's obviously an acronym. What does it stand for?
Yeah, absolutely. So our reality is first of all about doing our research, about making sure that we understand exactly what we're going into and the market the client's operating in and how they're operating, and we start to build some views on that, and then we then go in and we then evaluate the organization. So we look for checking against the research, and then we're then moving through then to analyzing. So we get our findings and we analyze, and we then start to pull together our plan, where we then look at how we can leverage all the current assets in the business to then help them, almost pulling the catapult back for that. And then what we're then looking to do is then using integrity and operating with integrity across this, that the advice we're giving and the delivery we're giving, we're able to back it up. And then what we're then targeting there is then targeted. So we're then doing our targeted change on how we recommend the steps we go through. So again, it's not eat the elephant in one go, it's break it down. Then the last bit is a reality, so it's with an E, is the execute phase. That's then when we then get to work. So yeah, that's very much how we work, but we're very excited by it, and it works. The positive thing is this approach works, and we've tested it over the years.
Yeah. I mean, how powerful is it? You've actually sat back and you said, okay, what is our methodology, what is our approach to a client and a project, and you've now developed a really meaningful acronym, because some businesses can develop acronyms that are just hollow, but you've actually sat there and said, right, let's define our approach, and you've come up with reality. It sounds absolutely on the money for me as a marketer anyway. I now want to take you out of all these business worlds that you've inhabited, this fascinating career, and ask you, how do you lead well and live well? So you're not in business anymore, Rich, you're at home. So maybe it's not so much leading well, it's living well. But yeah, how do you live well?
So for me, I love my running. And I have done, even from when I was a boy, I used to go off and do my cross-country running. As I've matured a bit with time and I'm looking at it, and I'm not not a young whippet anymore, so I'm not challenging for the fastest time. What I love about it for me is it's a chance to exercise my body, it's a chance to exercise my mind, it's a chance to rest, to process, to have time out with that. And for me, that's part of the real living well bit. The other bit is just time with your family and loved ones, and both, you know, parents, you know, the oldies and the youngsters, the youth, bringing them, just having time with them for me is precious, because there's so many things that distract it from it. And family often is the passive element that just sits and runs by and gets wasted. So that is really important. Otherwise, you know, once a week have date night with Mrs. B. We'll always go out and have quality time together, which is quickly try not to talk business then as well, because we're working things together. But yeah, and yeah, that's, and you know, that's where it works.
It sounds, I think, gosh, if anybody's living their brand, you know, morning, noon and night, it's you, Richard. And I want to ask you, before we move into you sharing your favourite quote and asking me a question, before we reach that hallowed space in our delightful chat together, are there any unfulfilled adventures that you would like to embark on in business or leisure?
Yes, I think leisure-wise, definitely there's so many mountains and areas to explore that I definitely want to do more. And I'm earmarking South America and possibly, you know, the Arctic, but lots of places to go. I think with business, you know, I really have some, I've set myself some real good growth plans that I want to achieve with that. And I can't do that without building my team and building my people, which is why, you know, that's so key. So I've got some really, really bold targets I'm set myself and going for. I've got myself a 7-year life plan that Mrs. B and I've sat down and worked through. So I've drawn the line of where we're going. And now it's about making it happen. So yeah, it's about just living and believing and doing what I stand by. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that. So I'm super excited about those adventures and also time out exploring.
Absolutely. Actually, something that we have got a bit of time, and I think I would be bereft if I didn't ask you about tornadoes. That I know last year you went on a holiday with your wife, Kirsty, and you were, is chasing tornadoes the right terminology?
Yes. Yeah, storm chasing, yeah.
We've got a minute, and I feel this is,
you've got to hear it.
Absolutely must share before we move into your quote.
So it's the only holiday you'll go on where you want to have storms. Yeah, blue skies are bad days. So storm chasing is basically, we go out and we're in Tornado Alley in America, and we study the weather and we look to where the forecasts will be for storms, and we'll then essentially get ourselves in the position to where the storm should initiate. And then once the storm starts to develop, we'll then follow that storm as it's going through. Now, you know, I have no desire to see, you know, the carnage that tornadoes can create. That's not what I'm there for. What I'm there for is just the humbling of nature when you've got a tornado in the middle of a field, not causing any harm to anybody, and you have gone from a little white cloud going up to a 40,000 foot cloud that's chalked up. You can hear the hail roaring in it. The winds have all changed around it, and it is a truly humbling experience. First time I saw it, was just blown away by it. And the other great thing with that, apart from the storm chasers, great, is you just go all over the place. So you go out well off the tourist beaten trail and you see the heart of the country, heart of America, and you're just out in the expanses of it. So it is a great trip, but you do a lot of miles traveling. It's great fun.
I've never heard of, I mean, when Kirsty told me about this last year, I was absolutely lost for words, which is a rarity for me. I quite like it that most people go on holiday and they berate it when there's rain or bad weather, and you're actually frustrated when it's beautiful and sunny because there's not a tornado on the skyline, which is just extraordinary. So we are now at that stage in the show where I would love you to share your favourite quote, and then you're going to turn the tables on me with your question. So what's okay. Your quote?
So I'm going to be a little bit cheeky. So first of all, my favourite quote, and this is probably, you know, resonates through me, and this is from Winston Churchill, and he says, this is no time for ease and comfort. It is time to dare and endure. And for me, that pushes, that's pushing that imposter syndrome. That's you know, ease and comfort's good, but if we want to push forward and develop and realize our plans, sometimes we've got to go into that scary place. So that's a big one. Then the other one we have on our whiteboard when we brainstorm things is every problem has a solution. It may sometimes just need a different perspective.
Oh, gosh, I like both of those.
So we have that in our area where we brainstorm in the office. So we take the problem, we go, right, let's just work through it, guys. So both are good. So first one's probably more about me and how I'm driving it. And then the other one is the ethos that we'll create.
Wow, they are quite profound. And you've got the quote on your whiteboard. Is it one of those where do you change it, or is that always there?
Always there, because people will always come to us with a problem and we will get it fixed.
Are you a person who's drawn to motivational quotes? I know some people, I mean, I love them. I eat them for breakfast, but are they something that appeals to you?
I love seeing how different humans and different people have processed and communicated how they're working through from their inspiration or their overcoming adversity. I find it really interesting. And then trying to look at the backstory as to why that was being done and what was the consequence of saying that as well. So I do find that very interesting. So I do love the quotes.
I think they're both fantastic. And now the drum roll, because I don't know the question you're going to ask me. Thus far, I have not been caught on the hop thinking, goodness me, I haven't got a clue. But I think there will be a show when I will just fall flat on my chops. But what is your question for me today?
Okay, drum roll, here we go. So, Dee, you are a multi-best-selling author. You're an incredibly driven lady. What is your inspiration and your furnace, your fire that just keeps driving you? What's your nuclear reactor?
Oh, wow. What is my inspiration? Gosh. I think I'm obviously, my family inspire me, and I want to be a really good example to my family and to particularly to my children, and now coming up my grandchildren. So they are a source of inspiration for me. And I think in the world at large, I am drawn to people that are successful but flawed and relatable. So I couldn't give you a whole list. In fact, at the time that this show will be coming out, be about a month from now, but we're in International Women's Day is coming up soon. And I was saying there that my biggest inspirations were my Auntie Mary, who looked after my dad when his mum died and who was a real support to me, but also my mum, who was a very working class lady, who we had very, very little money, and she had to dig deep to support my brother, who became really ill. And so I'm often inspired by, obviously in this case, two women in my family, but just generally on my travels. And where does my deep ambition come from? I think I would be hopeless just sitting at home doing nothing. I'm not a woman who can look after a home and enjoy cooking and cleaning and all the rest of it. I just have to be doing. And I really am at that stage in my life where I love sharing all my expertise and knowledge to benefit others. As you know, I'm not taking work on now. So I'm really looking at a new world and thinking, what really inspires me? Is it to do an editorial role here? Is it to do more speaking there? Is it to do a bit of mentoring? And I think the biggest underlying all of this is that I realize that there's less ahead of me than behind me, which isn't that the case for most of us, but I'm 63. And so I really want to make these years count. I want to seize the opportunity to become involved in the most fantastic projects, working with the most amazing people, because I might not get that chance again. I'm not starting out on my career as a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old woman. And so I always draw deep from that thinking, this is your time. I call myself babe, as I call everybody babe. This is your time, babe. You've got to go for it. You've got to make it happen. So how does that sound to you as a very long-winded, convoluted answer?
I love it. I love the transitions you've spoken about through life. I love how the perspective changes. Yeah, that's a rich tapestry of a fantastic answer, Dee. And I think that's what makes you, that comes across in hearing you talk, listen to the show, reading your books. I think that absolutely radiates on that. And, you know, I'm sure you'll be a great inspiration for your grandkids as my grandfather was for me.
Oh, gosh, of course, yeah, absolutely love you, lovely. And Richard, I could have talked to you for hours, but our time together is now coming to its end. And I just want to thank you for joining us. It's been really lovely chatting with you, walking through your careers, your inspirations, your outlook on imposter syndrome. Absolutely wonderful. So thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure, Dee, and thank you for the opportunity. And hope your listeners, enjoy the show. It's been an absolute pleasure and privilege. Thank you.
Bless. Thank you, Richard. Well, that was lovely, wasn't it, chatting to Richard? But now, as always, I want to turn the attention on you with my final thoughts for today. And really, harking back to what Richard was saying, when did you last challenge yourself to do something that pushed you out of your comfort zone? Perhaps you've been invited to speak at an event or take the helm at a meeting and you declined it because you felt a bit apprehensive about being judged. These are, of course, natural fears, especially if you're not used to doing something. However, if you are turning these opportunities down, is it time that you perhaps looked at what's really at the root of your reluctance and what you can do about it? Because as I say, ad infinitum, I think that playing it safe by living inside our bubble can become frustrating and claustrophobic. You can turn your back on so many great opportunities when unlocking the door of reluctance, fear, or just old habits of staying safe. They need to be addressed head on. As always, I go back to the same old mantra that you are capable of achieving so much more than you give yourself credit for. It's time for action. Until next week, thank you so much for your company. And this is me, Dee Blick, signing off. And by all means, get in touch. Share what you thought about Richard. Tell me your thoughts about the show. Thank you. You've been listening to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio.